Hi, this is Across the Pod Episode 1, the debut. Today we have an interview special with Scott Bourne, podcasting genius and head of iLifeZone.com, the iLifeZone podcast, and podcastingtricks.com. Okay, topic number one, what is Web 2.0? What's Web 2.0 in your opinion?
Web 2.0 is just a marketing phrase in my opinion. It's just designed to represent the new social media, consumer-generated media.
Yeah, I understand that. Obviously, it's just a buzzword that was, well, it's the name of a conference held at O'Reilly. Just in San Francisco over a year ago. There's another one coming up November, isn't there?
Yes, there is. My friend Derek Story is involved in that. I write for the O'Reilly websites, but I have nothing to do with that particular conference.
You won't be there, obviously. But,
no, not for that one.
Okay, moving on, the iPhone. You've done an IPO, you know a lot of legal stuff. What do we have on the copyright, which says that the iPhone is probably real?
Well, it's not so much the copyright, it's the trademark that made me believe that the iPhone is real. Apple usually only files for a trademark at the last minute if it thinks it's going to run with the product. The possible exception would be that they sometimes won't want a competitor to get something, so they'll trademark against it. But we've heard so much on the iPhone, I tend to think it's real, and I really am hoping it's real because I want one.
What was that famous number that you said you'd be able to pay Apple for an iPhone?
I was joking with Leo and said I'd pay $1,800 for an iPhone. That's probably a bit more than I would actually pay, but I would pay up to $600-$800 US for an iPhone that was fully functional, that perhaps mirrored the functions of my Palm Trio 650, but did it with Apple coordination. It really worked on the Macs in terms of syncing and felt and looked more like an iPod. I tend to think that that's a lot higher than what Apple would charge, probably something in the lines of $200-$400.
Yeah, something around the range of probably the first iPod when it came out.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but at least we know it hopefully won't be $1,800.
Yeah, I got a lot of people mad at me when I said that, but I was trying to make the point that I really, really want.
Yeah. So, mydreamapp.com, this site was dedicated to making new apps for the Mac based on merely ideas. Have you been involved in the judging for that or anything?
Actually, my buddy Merlin Mann,
43 Folders,
has done it for 43 Folders, and he's my co-host on Mac Break Weekly, which you can find at twit.tv. I think Amber, who's also on our show fairly regularly, is part of the judging, but I don't think that Leo got involved and I didn't get involved. Just didn't get asked to do that one, and frankly, didn't have time anymore.
Yeah. I'm an avid listener of all those podcasts, so I know what you mean when you say that.
Good.
Yeah. Listen to Mac Break Weekly, iLifeZone, etc. Yeah, so on to the next topic. We've had calls recently about Steve Jobs on the Zoom Wi-Fi, with the whole idea of the girl's gone by the time you put the trying to send the thing over. What did you think of that personally?
Well, you know, Steve is a rather brash fellow, and he was just trying to make the point, I think, that the Wi-Fi on the Zoom is pretty worthless at this point. A lot of people thought that the Zoom was originally going to include the ability to let you transfer your files back and forth, like you might update an iPod by connecting it to a dock. They hoped that the Wi-Fi component of the Zoom would allow you to simply electronically, through the air, update your portable, and obviously that's not the case. We now find out that all that Wi-Fi does is let you share songs. It's a marketing gimmick. And frankly, in our part of the world anyway, you're not going to find a whole lot of Zoom users to share with.
Yeah, I don't expect that will happen in the UK either. iPod is utterly dominant. Although, strangely enough, Apple filed a little something, a little patent on purchasing through Wi-Fi anyway, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And I think that there'll be a lot of Wi-Fi stuff happening in the next few years. I also think that one of the things that's keeping it from happening now is there are security concerns, because Wi-Fi is fairly easy to hack. And I think that Apple in particular is a little bit cautious about using Wi-Fi in places where it can open up the OS to attack.
Yeah, particularly. I mean, we saw this with the Sony Milo, My Life Online, when that came out. There was a whole worry about security because it didn't have VPNing capability or much secure Wi-Fi capability, and you run on the old protocol, which wasn't that secure. So, like you say, there's still a lot of work to be done in that industry.
Yeah, the Wi-Fi security issue has to be solved, and once it is, duck, because we will see a flurry of Wi-Fi material, and I venture to say that it'll be tough to find anything you can buy 5 years from now that will have a cord attached to it.
Yeah, that's quite possible. I've had a question from my co-host, who for some reason can't be here tonight. Something turned up, and I have to apologize for that. But he was wondering about your ideas on the True Video iPod. Is it real? The whole click, abandoning the click wheel, was that really going to work?
Well, we really don't know for sure what the video iPod's going to look like. I assure you there is going to be one. We don't know exactly what kind of changes there'll be. There are a lot of rumors that the click wheel is now something embedded in software that will come up on the screen, and you'll use a click wheel-like device, it'll just be embedded in software. One of the things that Alex Lindsay and I were pondering was how that would work in terms of fingerprints on the screen, etc. It seems to be quite a challenge. But yet, everything I hear leads me to believe that as soon as Macworld in January in the U.S. here, we will see something along the lines of the iPod. Of course, then again, we've been thinking that was coming all year long. So, who knows, Steve might continue to leave us waiting.
Quite possible. But he could do what he did this year all over again with the whole, I believe Woz did this whole thing at Macworld, where he said for every five jokes you have, four of them are bad, one of them are good. And obviously the last keynote he did when he released three new iPods was probably the good one. I think someone said a lot of sugar, not enough protein. So he might do that all over again next year. You never know. He's that kind of guy. Yeah. I think the iTunes.
Let me comment there, because I think there's a couple of things that we should take note of. They ran out the MacBook Pro upgrades a couple of days or a week ago. They did the iMac upgrades. They've done a lot of the things that you might have thought they could have saved for Macworld.
Sleep
streaming. That leads me to believe that we're going to see maybe two of three of the big ideas. The ITV we know we're going to see, and it could either be the iPhone or the True Video with iPod. That would leave enough room in that Macworld keynote to make a really big splash with those things. Whereas if they had pushed the MacBook Pro upgrades or the iMac upgrades into that stream, it might have taken away the thunder of those other opportunities.
Yeah, you kind of saw that in Macworld 2006 when it was like, oh yeah, we have the MacBook Pro, it does this, it does that, like that. And you had, we also have another computer, we have new software, and it kind of crammed together so you couldn't really blow your socks off, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I believe the term Tom Merritt from CNET used was the reality distortion field, not really in effect. The idea that Steve Jobs announces minuscule market share and applause arises throughout in a raucous affair.
Well, I do have to admit that it's an intoxicated environment. I was at the keynote this year with Leo Laborde and Alex Lindsay. We were sitting there together, and you know, we've been to lots of industry events, each of us separately, and some of us sometimes as a group. And I was quite amazed at the control that Steve does have over the audience. Everybody is excited. I think that has something to do with Apple's hold on its audience. It's like Harley Davidson motorcycles. People get this brand tattooed on their arm. That's devotion to a brand. Now, I don't know too many people with Mac tattoos, but I do know lots of people that are willing to stand up and applaud in a Steve Jobs keynote.
Yeah, but that's maybe due to the fact they have a lot of Apple engineers there to start the clapping when he needs it, if it's not already started.
Oh, you sound like a cynical young person.
Well, listened to Twit since episode 36, so I know how to be cynical about Steve Jobs.
Yeah, well, you know, he does do what he does well, but I can't tell you, being in the audience, a lot of what you see there is truly spontaneous, and it's hard not to get caught up in it. I was very excited when the MacBook Pro was announced, and you might have heard me recount the story recently on one of the shows. I ran to my session that I was supposed to be teaching with Derek on Aperture, and while Derek was doing the introductions, I opened up my PowerBook and used Wi-Fi to jump into the Apple Store and order the first MacBook Pro.
Yeah. Speaking of Aperture, what about this whole idea that Lightroom is going to kill Aperture? I mean, I'm running on Windows here, and I've tried out the Lightroom beta myself, very slick. I mean, for Windows users, it's the closest thing we're ever going to get to Aperture. What about on the Mac side?
I just don't see Lightroom causing Aperture much trouble on the Mac side. It simply isn't, it's just not as robust. It doesn't offer as deep a feature set. And we really, once again, do not know what it's going to be like when we open up the final gold release. Everybody's got to remember, we're in beta on this thing. And what you see now may change dramatically. And some of the features that are there now might not be. There might be features that are added. First of all, it's very popular now because it's free. People have to pay a couple hundred dollars for it, which is what we guess the price will be. That will change how they feel about it. And if you use both programs side by side, it's very easy to see where Aperture is just a lot deeper program. Now, I have no dog in this hunt. I've written a best-selling book on Photoshop, so I like Adobe products just fine. Mm-hmm. But it's Aperture, in my opinion, that wins that fight today. Now, keep in mind that can change.
Yeah. But as I said, like Adobe has been moving away from Apple, and Apple's been moving away from Adobe, especially in the last 6 to 9 months. I mean, this quite possibly has to be the first Mac world where you saw Quark beating the whole new big app that they were showing. Oh yeah, Universal, whereas Steve Jobs had to grudgingly say, oh yeah, Photoshop takes a while to load. So I think it could be because of Aperture and DVD Studio Pro, other programs like that, encroaching on Adobe's territory now.
It's an interesting dynamic, the relationship between those two companies. When Adobe got angry with Apple and stopped selling it to the video market, I thought that could be the beginning of the end. But then I have some friends that work for Adobe who reminded me that the Mac Photoshop audience is pretty huge, and Adobe would be cutting off its nose to spite its face, as we say over in the States, if they were to do away with that relationship when it comes to Photoshop. I don't know, going forward, there were some rumors that with Parallels and Bootcamp, some companies might start developing only from the Windows space, assuming that the Mac users would jump into Parallels or Bootcamp to use these programs. But I just don't see that happening with Photoshop. It's a very large installed Mac base, and it's not something I think Adobe can afford to say goodbye to.
Not only that, but I think David Pogue made this point that with Bootcamp and Parallels, you have to pay money to get them. I mean, it's not like, say, with something like Wine, it's free. You can assume somebody can do that. I think, what was it, Cider, a new game release platform released a few months ago now. Now, that's free, and it was included with the game. So that's something developers can assume. But with Bootcamp, you can't really make that assumption.
Yeah, that's true. And I'll never use Bootcamp or Parallels myself. I'm sorry. I'm a Mac guy through and through.
Blue screen.
I can use Aperture right now. I can use Lightroom right now. I use Photoshop. I prefer Aperture to all of the photo editing programs as it sits today.
Mm. And you famously said, I will not put my blue screen of death on my Mac.
No, I'm sorry. I just can't get my arms around that. I bought a Mac because I want a Mac. And I have a PC in my office. And every time I walk by it, I make the little cross sign with my fingers.
Yeah, I mean, they made fun of this when Apple switched to Intel. They did this short parody version, where it was basically the entire first advert, you know, the whole, oh, it's finally free, the Intel chip. And then right at the end, it's replaced by a blue screen of death. Imagine, halfway through, imagine the possibilities, blue screen of death appears. I think that's the fifth. And even for Mac users, I think there was this tutorial up on Dig a few weeks ago, which was like, how to put the blue screen of death on your Mac. I'm like, why would a Mac user want to do that?
Yeah, not me. I will never, ever do it, no matter, even if it were free. I simply can't get my arms around it. Now, Leo, he likes to use Windows 2. Alex uses Windows for a couple of special applications in the video editing side. But I think Leo did say the other day that the main reason he used Windows was to use Adobe Audition and or some other program for editing, and that he thought that some of the new Mac editing programs might supplant that, so we might not see much Leo on the Windows side, other than the fact that, of course, he does a Windows podcast.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do a MacBreak Weekly style thing here. I'm going to ask you for not a piece of software, because that would be too much, I'd feel, encroaching on their territory, but a website that's really like been a tip, like really giving you something, you know, good.
Okay, well, actually, I'll give you one that's sort of a preliminary tip that is going to be debuted on the next episode of the iLife Zone. We're doing our Tip Monster 2 show.
Been looking forward to that.
It'll be out on the 1st, and one of the tips that I gave was to visit a website that does file conversions free of charge. It's called Media Convert, M-E-D-I-A, with a hyphen, and then the word convert, C-O-N-V-E-R-T.com. And what they do is allow you to upload virtually any kind of file, whether it's an audio file, or a spreadsheet, Word document, and convert it to almost any other kind of file, and they do it for absolutely free. Now, the only limitation is that the file can't be larger than 50 megs. But they do have support for 200 formats. It's a brilliant site. I'm sure that they're trying to use an ad-supported model. I hope that they stay around a while, because they're very convenient to have nearby if you don't have the app you need on your desktop to make the switch.
Yeah. Okay, my tip's going to be let's just find the lineup here. We've actually got it here somewhere. Hicks Design. Hicks Design is this person who has, you know, the RSS reader blog lines. I believe his comment was, it looks a bit too Windows for him. So he's built this great CSS interface, which you can just strap onto your blog lines, and it makes it look just like Aqua. I'll just find the URL here. It makes it look like Aqua. It's hicksdesign.co.uk/journal/blogline/skin. It's been on Dig, it's been on Slashdot, it's been highly acclaimed. It basically puts a very nice Mac skin on blogline, so if you're far from your net news wire, you can still have your RSS in a nice Aqua interface.
I actually have to confess that I am a Bloglines user.
So you may be wanting to use this skin then?
Yeah, I'll check it out. That's a good tip.
Yeah, It works for Camino or Firefox, or Camino on the Mac, Firefox also on the Mac, or Safari, OmniWeb, and Opera. Yes, two versions. The Firefox version works with a little application called, little extension rather, called Stylish, which allows you to put these CSS things in, and it works. Just like that. You don't need to mess around with the Chrome folder or anything.
Well, I'm excited to take a look at that.
Yeah, I'll just send you the link right now.
That'd be great.
Yep. Here it is. Okay, thanks for that. So just for the listeners know, your websites are...
Okay, you can reach me at podcastingtricks.com. Or through the Twit network at twit.tv, and the shows that I'm involved with are the iLife Zone, MacBreak Weekly, and I'll make a bit of an announcement here. We've only talked about this once or twice. We have a brand new video podcast coming out at the end of the month called Gear Media Tech, and that's Leo Laporte, myself, and Alex, and we're going to do a video podcast where we show people how we do all of the TWIT Network podcasts. We're going to review equipment, teach people how to use that equipment, give some voice lessons, the whole nine yards. It's going to be a lot of fun. So that's how folks can get hold of me.
Well, let's first get the scoop on the first episode.
Okay.
That was Scott Bourne, podcastingtricks.com and ilifezone.com. Thank you for listening. We hope you'll tune in next time.